You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The book we're talking about, Follow the Science, How Big Pharma Misleads, Obscures, and Prevails, by investigative journalist Cheryl Atkinson. She is also a host of her own Sunday TV show, Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. I believe it's on the Sinclair Network, is it? Is that correct?
Yep, Sinclair on stations across the country.
Okay. And she's written a lot of great books criticizing the way that information is shaped and filtered by the powers that be, that people who don't conform are marginalized, shadow banned, and sometimes outright blackballed, deplatformed. That is certainly become a facet of American life. When it comes to medical journals, though, you write very pointedly that the very science that we tend to rely upon in our selection of drugs and procedures is fundamentally tainted. You write, and I'm quoting, "Misinformation issued on a grand scale saturates the information landscape and becomes possible to avoid the government, federal agencies, doctors, medical associations, and cleverly disguised nonprofits backed by industry push this misinformation on the public with impunity. And even most of your doctors don't know that the medical journals they rely upon are filled with unreliable studies hopelessly tainted by drug industry interests." And that's according to some of the journal editors themselves. Former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Marcia Angel, famously declared back in 2009, she resigned and she said, "It's simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published." That's a pretty dramatic statement from a former editor of the prestigious New England Journal of Medicine.
And similar sentiment from the current editor of Lancet, Richard Horton. Dr. Horton said, "Much of the science is not to be believed in medical journals," and he had a huge percentage, I forget what the exact number was, for the very same reason. So these prestigious journal editors understand that their industry has been so co-opted by pharmaceutical and medical interests that your doctors are consuming what they consider sort of, you know, their Bible, these journals, not understanding that I would argue the bulk of what they read in the journals under the guise of scholarly letters and studies is little more than an ad for a pharmaceutical company. It's not marked as an ad, but there's studies brought to you by the drug company where these days the negative studies, they keep from being published. There used to be a time when positive and negative studies were published because all of it adds to the information base. Now the contracts read such that anything negative, you're never going to know the drug does something negative. So they'll study and study and study and tweak the data and, you know, fix it up until they can point to something they think the best case scenario is something that's positive. And then they can manipulate, manipulate the timeline, for example, if they see a benefit in the short term of a drug for, you know, let's say you use it for 7 months, but the eighth month it turns around and creates a problem, they'll publish the first 7 months of the results and pretend that there wasn't an eighth month. There's all kinds of tricks that are played to make sure a positive light is put on the product that they want to make money off of and that you're never going to learn about, you're less likely to learn from this information about the problems with the drugs. They hit the market over time, and it takes some time, and a lot of people are using the medicine and a lot of reports before the trends of adverse events are developed and confirmed. But by then, the drug companies, even if they have to withdraw the product or limit the product, they've made so much money that it's all part of the game plan. It's actually, they actually calculate into their formula on the front end the types of money they have to, they may have to pay out of lawsuits because of adverse events on the back end of the drug.
They consider it breakage, and they work that in, you know, so as if they owned a pottery store or something like that, right? Examples of which have occurred with Alzheimer's disease. They recently withdrew an ALS drug that was said to be promising, but then it turned out it really didn't make a difference. But they said, well, we're going to phase it out. Well, after a lot of people pinned their hopes on it and probably spent a lot of money on it, because these drugs don't come cheap, and that's the landscape out there.
Yeah, you know, aducanumab was billed as this great hope for Alzheimer's, was approved, I would say, the most controversial drug approval of our time. Not one FDA advisor, and they're usually, if any, conflicted on behalf of the drug companies, but not one FDA advisor thought this medicine should be approved. And it had gone through a process, a weird process, where in the study phase, it was stopped due to futility. And that means, maybe your audience already knows this, but there's so little hope the way the study's going so far that anything positive will come of it. There's no point in continuing the study, and it could be harmful even to the study patients. So they stopped it. And then lo and behold, in a short period of time, come back to the FDA and say, well, maybe we were wrong. And now in partnership, very controversial partnership with the FDA, make a new presentation with no new studies. Well, we recrunched the data and we think there may be a benefit. And the best benefit they could squeeze out was so little that it was acknowledged by pretty much every expert that the patients wouldn't be able to tell a difference. Their loved ones wouldn't be able to tell a difference if it worked at all, because it was so minor if it worked. It comes with side effects. It costs something like $10,000, I think, some crazy amount of money per shot. And they went ahead and approved it. You know, the FDA did. And I believe two people quit from the FDA advisory committee after this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at least to the credit of some, because some of the professional agencies or professional groups of physicians, like neurologists who would prescribe this, who again, sometimes might tend to be a little too pro-industry, even they said this was a bad idea. So nobody was prescribing it. That's why it got pulled off the market and replaced by something made by the same company, approved under similar circumstances with controversies for the same expensive over crazy price that the government's going to have to pay, because most of those are Medicare patients. That was approved, again, with virtually no proof, according to experts, that there would be any difference that anybody could tell if it did work, because it would be so slight for these patients. So these are the types of things that are happening. And then the drugs or the treatments or the preventions that are not being looked at, because all of these products that are going to make companies money get the priority. I think that's a huge story, is, you know, the things that aren't being studied because it will cost money to some of these industries or not make money for somebody.
There was an example of it during COVID. COVID was kind of a teachable moment around this, because when people began to propose that simple natural measures like taking, you know, vitamin D at higher doses, and according to studies, there is some efficacy, although it's not a panacea, or taking old repurposed drugs like hydroxychloroquine. Again, not a panacea, I will admit, but there may have been some efficacy according to some studies. And then ivermectin also. There was a very vicious campaign undertaken, and there was a recent court decision that said that the FDA could no longer run lurid ads, or the CDC, I don't know, whether the FDA or the CDC, saying, you're not a horse, don't take this drug. I mean, talk about abrogating freedom of choice in making healthcare decisions. It was a pretty, pretty concerted campaign to quash all the alternatives to things like Paxlovid and so on.
Yeah, that was the FDA. And the court found recently, I mean, better late than ever, not the court's fault, but I'm saying these things in the moment can't be changed. The government's so full of its, you know, propaganda. But the court found the FDA was putting out misinformation, you know, just not even cloaking it, as it was just false to imply that ivermectin was a horse drug. And the court pointed out that the FDA left off the fact that there had been a human approved drug that was safe and effective, had been in use for many decades, instead tried to create the impression among the public that this was a veterinary medicine that was dangerous that they shouldn't take. And they were recently required or agreed to take down, all these years later, those ridiculous tweets where they said, yeah, come on, y'all, you're not a horse. Don't take this medicine. But you do have to wonder if ivermectin works the way many studies imply and the way many treating clinicians say that it did, how many lives might have been improved or saved if that had gotten the, you know, the hearing or the use that it could have.
I mean, why not? Or again, nobody, I think, is suggesting that ivermectin is the magic bullet against COVID. I think only the most extreme people would allege that. But, you know, when in medicine, it's an imprecise art, and especially against a new pathogen, we had to pull out all the stops and use whatever was at our disposal. And doctors literally would have their licenses challenged. Pharmacists wouldn't fill prescriptions. There was actually a ban on these, you know, relatively harmless alternatives.
You know, and how about the notion, with what little I know about the immune system, and maybe you could expand upon this a little bit, but I couldn't help but think how terrified people became when they learned, especially that first year or so, year or two, when they learned they had COVID. And if you had been told prior to this that you caught the flu or something, most people wouldn't panic and think, I might die. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be the thought most people have. But the government / medical establishment had people so terrified about COVID that could that not, the fear and the panic when you get that test and you learn you have it, could that not impact your immune system and make you sicker potentially than you might have been, the fear that you have and how that impacts your whole reaction and response to the virus?
But it's a well-known phenomenon.
I thought about that and wondered.
It's a well-known phenomenon.
It's
the opposite of the placebo effect. It's the nocebo effect, the opposite of the placebo effect. It's the effect that an oncologist might have on a patient who, telling that patient, you're going to die, you know, when, you know, it is questionable their survival, but, you know, it's almost like the word of God, or, you know, like a judgment from on high.
I just wonder if the government had told the truth. Sometimes, you know, even when there aren't corrupt motivations, they think it's their job for some reason to gen up concern and worry when maybe there need not be. And sometimes there's evidence they do that to sell a product, but sometimes I think it's just what they think they're supposed to do. And I wonder what the impact might have been had there been a message that was truthful that said something like, you know, this can be a very serious disease for vulnerable people, and we need to keep our eye on it and be very careful. But for most people, it is not.
Indeed.
And please don't panic. You know, you need to figure out which category you fall into and be treated accordingly.
Indeed. There's also been a politicization of medical journals, journal articles, and scientific reports. There's a lot of dire predictions about the health consequences of climate change and global warming. And some of them are real, but some of them are, you know, it's almost like harnessed to the agenda of people who want to point out that we're headed for a potential Armageddon. There's also, recently, I saw an article in Journal of the American Medical Association, which kind of blandly stated that Republicans are more likely to report vaccine side effects than Democrats, the implication being that this is somehow, you know, politically motivated or psychosomatic, or the MAGA people in some ways are drinking the Kool-Aid about harmful vaccine effects. There really is a kind of a sea change in who has commandeered the medical discourse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this in previous books. If the propagandists can serve no other purpose other than politicizing an issue so that everybody thinks if you say one thing, it's because of a political issue, if you say the other, or maybe you keep your mouth shut, or if they simply confuse things so you don't know what to believe, they've accomplished their goal in many cases. And I can tell you, I am on mailing lists for a lot of different things, including CDC. The amount of money they're spending and time and attention on things like how certain things must be impacted by social theories, I would argue, yep. not necessarily proven fact, mm-hmm. and social movements. There's so much about diversity and how, you know, certain marginalized studies about how marginalized populations are being treated and how the diseases are, you know, harder for them. And I'm thinking, what on earth, with all the studies we need to do that are possible to do that aren't being done, but all the effort that's going into these distracting issues that aren't really changing, I would argue, changing the course of our public health while we're getting sicker and sicker as a society and spending more money than ever and watching our life expectancy decline. I mean, it's just crazy that the focus, when I see what they send out, that the focus is on what it is.
Here's an example. Headline here, Mass General Brigham Hospital, possibly the most prestigious hospital in the United States, the Harvard Health System, puts anti-racism on display with a policy where they announced that they'll stop reporting to child welfare officials suspected incidents of abuse or neglect solely because a fetus or a newborn is exposed to drugs. Now, I trained in the South Bronx, a place which is, you know, predominantly minority. I got to tell you, there were a lot of 14-year-old gals who came in labor who had just had a bottle of whiskey or had just shot up. They were literally stoned and addicted. And that has an impact on the outcome, for sure. Now, the ugly fact about it is, an incontrovertible fact, is that they were predominantly minority individuals. I mean, hence they lived in, you know, poorer minority neighborhoods. So to abrogate the right of doctors to report these kind of cases, you know, they say, well, it's racism because Black pregnant people are more likely to be drug tested and to be reported to child welfare systems than white pregnant people. But this is just a matter of demographics. I mean, it is what it is.
Well, I argue that facts can't be racist by definition. You know, if it's a fact, it has no motivation on its own. Now, the way someone may use a fact could be, but the facts themselves cannot by definition be racist, and yet it's treated that way all the time. And I think to the detriment of the health of the public. People are bending over backwards, sometimes with hidden agendas, and sometimes maybe just because they think they're doing good, bending over to do things they think may be the right thing that are probably having the opposite impact. But once again, all this focus and discussion on something that I don't think serves in the end to help people, when you look at what's being left undone that needs to be done, you know, maybe this is branching off a bit from that conversation, but the billions that have been appropriated of our tax dollar money to conduct studies and work on COVID-related things. And yet, from what I can tell, there's no public study or publicly announced study that does the most basic thing that should have been tracked from the beginning and would have been easy to track. We need to know when it came to the COVID vaccine, what injuries were coming, let's say from long COVID or whatever they want to call ongoing long illnesses and injuries after COVID, and which ones are coming after the vaccine, or which ones might be a combination of both, because we need the evidence to know, was it more of a benefit or a harm to get vaccinated and for which populations? But nobody's trying to use public money to find that out. So it's being left to individual doctors and researchers who are trying to piece it together with no money. And I just think that's hugely irresponsible on the government's part.
And you conclude the book with a flourish. You write, Americans are increasingly depressed, fat, infertile, unfocused, and medicated. Among comparable developed nations, we're taking the most pills, paying the most for our medical care, growing the sickest. Yet it's as if our health experts don't notice what's right in front of their noses. They remain hyper-focused on collaborating with the insurers, hospitals, and pharmaceutical interests that are getting rich off our poor health. So I think that is very well said.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I just think if you step back, sometimes we're criticizing the fine points of what's wrong, when if you step back and look, it's the entire system, the focus. It's not just this little tweak needs to be made, or maybe this little corner needs to be turned. There's just major problems in this country.
So finally, you know, the book points out a lot of problems, but you also offer solutions. What are some of those solutions? What do you suggest that the average consumer of medical information the average patient do under these, you know, kind of constrained circumstances?
Well, unfortunately, some of this requires some time. And the media used to serve the role of being able to cut through some of this so that you could get in a summary form just honest and factual information. Now that they don't do it, you may have to look on your own for trusted sources or who to trust based in part on who you notice has been correct about things in the recent past. That's one of my big guides. When COVID started, I listened to everybody. I didn't know who was going to prove right about all these conflicting decisions. It's pretty easy and got pretty easy quickly to look back and see who was accurate and who was inaccurate. And those are the people that I tend to trust more now when they make a new proclamation about something. Well, first of all, there's a list in the book of people that you may want to turn to for information. So there's some specific resources if you want a place to start. But I also argue, continue to look at the slanted information because that can be very informative as well. And you can start to get your own barometer for what could be true and what might be not true and what questions you should ask. But whenever you see the media seemingly all on the same, I guess you could say, beating the same drum or marching to the same music on a medical topic, you should immediately assume there is an invisible hand behind the scenes that's helping orchestrate this. Even if the reporters don't know they're being used, the material they're receiving either from official government sources or from what look like patient advocacy groups but may actually be funded by the pharmaceutical industry, this information is put out there for a purpose. And you should immediately ask the question as to who wants me to believe this information and why. And then, as we touched upon earlier, when you see these fact checks and something disparaged is not true, when it's by these usual fact checkers, and I talk about them in that last chapter as well, you should at least suspect that the truth may be the opposite of what they're claiming. It may not always be, but that should be a suspicion that immediately comes to your mind. And get informed and don't be afraid to discuss these things with your doctor. Some doctors are very good and open-minded. They want this information. Some, you will see, they shut down immediately and they're just not going to hear it. I've been told, and I'd love to hear your comment on this if you have time before we go,
sure,
that people should be looking, if they're looking for this kind of doctor that listens to them, integrative medicine like you, root cause medicine, and there were one or two other names for specialties that I think are growing because people are looking for alternatives outside the medical establishment who will really get to the problems and solve their disorders, not just give them a pill that could give them 3 adverse events. What are your thoughts on
that? Well, thank you for throwing me a high hanging curveball that I can hit out of the park. You know, I certainly can agree with you on that because, you know, look, my orientation is, you know, I entered medicine. Originally, I believed in natural therapies, but I wanted to learn about the pharmacopoeia and I wanted to learn about how natural therapies interact, about the advantages of medication. And I believe in integrative medicine, which means the best of both worlds harnessed together. But I also think that doctors, you know, we're little scientists, you know, in our orientation that, you know, we had a love for science, but we wanted to serve humanity. But as such, we shouldn't be following paint-by-numbers medicine. We shouldn't be following algorithms that are handed down to us from on high. I mean, they're convenient to follow, you know, this for this disease or this cholesterol level, you know, you do this, pretty soon we'll be able to do medicine through AI, you know, via chatbot, if that really were the case. We're supposed to be discerning consumers of medical science, medical information, and we're supposed to protect our patients from, frankly, the self-centered interests of the pharmaceutical industry. And use quality products with discernment when appropriate. And unfortunately, there's far too little of that in medicine today. So I fully agree with you. I think integrative medicine, functional medicine, looking for root causes, using a natural approach first, I think is really going to be the salvation of the American medical system, which, by the way, you know, we spend, you know, by manyfold more than many other medical systems across the world, and we're not getting enough bang for our buck, for sure.
Well, I would love for people to keep in mind one thing, maybe as a takeaway, that your doctor most likely was educated in a medical school that received a lot of funding from the pharmaceutical industry, mm-hmm, by professors connected to the pharmaceutical industry with lunches bought in by the pharmaceutical industry, with medical textbooks written by Merck, big pharmaceutical company that I've looked through myself that doesn't mention things we know about side effects and drugs and vaccine. And then they go on to read medical journals, which are largely advertising for the pharmaceutical industry. And when you get down to it, unless you have a really independent-minded physician who has a lot of time, because, you know, in their defense, it takes time to sort through this and get answers and find the studies that aren't, you know, conflicted and to figure out the truth, you're going to get one view of the world when it comes to your health. And a lot of people think that's probably part of what's making us sicker. So keep your own eye on the information and the kind of doctor that you see, if possible, to get the most out of your health.
Great stuff, Cheryl Atkinson. The book is Follow the Science, and it's going to be out at the end of the summer, but it's actually available for pre-order, and I recommend very highly that you go there and get a hold of it, because it really hits on a lot of the themes that our intelligent medicine listeners are concerned with. And do you have a website as well as your Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson TV show?
Yeah. Well, fullmeasure.news, you can see replays of stories if you missed them on TV. But CherylAtkinson.com, even if you misspell my name, that should come up. There's specifically also a health and medical tab with all kinds of stuff on there, including my investigation on the origins of COVID, with all the citations and footnotes and grant applications and so on. I mean, this was gain of function research. There was no dispute of that. I published this some years ago. It was referred to as such in the grant and in the published studies. And I still don't know why people are still saying things like, was it really gain of function? Like the government and the studies and the funding admitted that it was, you know, it's all there in black and white. But there's a lot of medical stuff at CherylAtkinson.com, and I try to cross-post a lot of my work there.
Great. And let's spell your last name for clarity. It's Atkisson, right?
Yes. But even if you misspell it, it'll usually find me. But yeah. Yes.
They have sort of a self-correct capability on the online forums. Good stuff. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about your newest book, Follow the Science. And I just got to commend you on a very courageous career, because I know it wasn't easy, that you experienced a lot of pushback, a lot of professional roadblocks. And you've created a path where you can stay true to your guns and continue your fantastic investigative reporting as an independent journalist with Full Measure, which I think is becoming a new trend. You know, people are kind of fleeing the traditional networks and going to other sources and traditional media, you know, the big newspapers, and going to independent sources that are not constrained by all the influences that you so successfully point out in your books, such as Slanted and The Smear and Stonewalled, you know, where clearly there's an effort to stifle original thought in this country.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Important stuff.
Great. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.